Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 18th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. If you're listening to this podcast before Jack Leiter makes his MLB debut, come on down. I am live at playback.tv/PitcherList, watching this game with the PitcherList community for free, 100% free. Just hang out. We're all going to be watching it together. This is how baseball should be enjoyed. All of your friends, all these good people watching this thing together and talking about it. So that starts at 1 o'clock. I'll be at playback.tv/PitcherList, as I do every single weekday morning at 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern time. It's my office hours. But yeah, I'm going to be live reacting to Jack Leiter. Come hang out with me. Tanner Houck, complete game shutout yesterday. It was dope. It was a Maddux, 94 pitches. And if you were confused about the SP roundup image, it was Bachelor Chowk, as in Bachelor Chow from Futurama. It's a great reference, okay? And also, I thought to myself, right, he's like, he was a bachelor. He was on your waiver wire. He was single looking for a partner. You picked him up because he had good early matchups. And yes, he did have one stumble in his previous outing where everything was like right down the middle. This one was better. It was around the edges a lot with the slider, a lot of changeups down and away. I don't know if they're splitters or changeups. What I find interesting is that sometimes we forget that, like, it's the year of the splitter, yet there were a lot of split changeups before that we just called changeups. And the difference between a changeup really should be a circle change and a split is really what the two are. Lance Brzozowski had a really great point saying that the image of Houck from this year has him making the circle with his thumb and his index finger. However, that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't a splitter, because you could be doing it with your middle and ring. It does look like he maybe changed that to be more of a circle change, which is more consistent, and that's really good and more believable that Houck will have that slow ball for lefties moving forward, which is his biggest weakness. So that's a really cool thing from Houck. Makes me a little bit more of a believer that Houck can be good throughout the rest of the year. However, I literally just sent a trade proposal to someone in my league for Paul Skenes for Tanner Houck. I don't think that they're going to do it, but that's kind of where my head is at right now. This is the moment to sell Tanner Houck, because I don't really think he's going to be that SP3. I think he's going to be more like SP4, SP5. I think throughout the entire year, there are going to be moments when you think, oh no, maybe this is the time that we move on from Tanner Houck. Looking at other guys on that pitched yesterday, Christopher Sanchez did exactly what he was supposed to do against Rocky Road. Jake Irvin had a birthday party. That is, it happens once a year when we celebrate against the Dodgers. Amazing. He threw so many pitches like right down the middle. I don't understand how he went 9 for 43 whiffs on his four-seamer. I really don't. But it worked, and cool. Luis Severino against the Pirates. So, 6 innings, 0 runs, 8 base runners, 3 walks, 4 Ks, 8 strikeouts, 24% CSW. I want to like this, but it just felt like kitchen sink day. You know, not, oh man, my four-seamer's better, and my cutter is doing all this great work. Like, a cutter is good. Like, I like that he has it, but he really is turning into like a crafty righty. So he's a Toby. Just think of Luis Severino as a Toby. Okay, cool. Speaking of Tobys, we have Eric Fede against the Royals, and he did what he was supposed to do. Got the win. 5.2 innings of 0 runs. That's awesome. 6 base runners, 5 Ks. Great. This is it. He stayed up a lot with his cutter and sweeper. And then he had some decent splitters low. Like, he is a Toby, and we should really be keeping him in our mind as that. It's not something that I need to go after. I think just chase the poor matchups, and you will still get wins. I know it's the White Sox, but they are going to score some runs. Like, even if you're a bad offense, you should score, what, 2 to 3 a game? And if you go one earned run or two earned runs in 5 innings or so, then, like, yeah, you have a good chance at a win. That's how baseball works. Okay. So so keep Fetty in mind, who's not going to be rostered. Like, I highly doubt there will be a time this year that Eric Fetty is going to be comfortably over 20% rostered. Albert Suarez, 5.2 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts, 14 whiffs as well. This is awesome because if you remember in the spring, Albert Suarez had this one game like, all right, who is this guy? And then, oh my gosh, he was throwing 96, 97 upstairs beautifully, and it was awesome, and we were kind of stoked about Albert Suarez, and then we saw the other starts, and we thought, oh, he's not at 96 anymore. He's like 93, 94, and the secondaries are pretty lacking. So I had no idea what we were going to get when I saw that all of a sudden the Orioles are letting him start. This is phenomenal. 14 whiffs, 29% CSW, 0 runs and 5.2. It was against the Twins. He did locate that 96, 97 per hour fastball upstairs, though. That was the thing. And everything else was just kind of there. It was like cutters and curves and changeups were just like around. But it was just that four-seamer, and he does get the Angels next, and there's a chance. I get a feeling it's going to be like how it was in the spring, where we had one start of Albert Suarez getting that adrenaline and being like, oh boy, and then the ones after that are not nearly as good. So I don't feel like you need to run to the wire for the start against the Angels, but if you want to, I don't blame you, it's okay. Bryce Wilson against the Padres, he was part of a bullpen game for him, 3.2 innings, we move on. Michael King, all right, so no more DMs about Michael King, right? Like, we're good? Because it was 7.2 innings, a 1 earned run, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts, 17 whiffs, 39% CSW for a King Cole. Okay, we good? Like, he's not cooked. He's amazing. He's not, I mean, yeah, he's very good. The command was what it was supposed to be. This was at Milwaukee, too. It wasn't like it was a pushover of a team. Yeah, we're good. Cool. Pablo Lopez, also good. Well, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. He also allowed a home run in the first to Gunnar Henderson, and that was it. I mean, that's like Pablo's style, right? Like, the first batter hits a home run, and all of a sudden, like, okay. With Pablo, I did an episode with the Craft, of the Craft with Eno yesterday, which is, I gotta say, guys, I know I say, like, every podcast, but if you're not listening to that show with me and Eno Saris talking about pitching once a week, well, I guess recurring guest Eno Saris once a week, you are doing it wrong, because that is just so much fun. It is the easiest flowing podcast that I do, of just like, Eno's such an amazing conversationalist. And the fact that we don't really have a rundown, we just say, cool, what have you seen this week about pitching? And it's just two friends hanging out, be like, oh man, did you see that thing, for like an hour. It's so fun. We talked about Pablo. My takeaway about Pablo Lopez is his four seamer hasn't really been the pitch it's supposed to be. Had a super high strike rate in the first game, then kind of lower in the last two. He had a much higher strike rate on this one, but he didn't really locate it well. Like, it was a lot of YM lock in this game. Like, all of it was. And that worked, which is interesting, because it shouldn't. And I still feel like Pablo Lopez isn't quite locked in when it comes to his command yet, which is a really good thing, because considering this was an amazing line against a fantastic offense. And Pablo Lopez is not destined to have a poorly spotted fastball, right? Like, think about that. When you consider Pablo Lopez over his career, that is not who he is. And the idea that this 3-game stretch of it is now all of a sudden who he is forever now, like, that's, no. Chris Towers has a great phrase, history did not begin 3 weeks ago, right? Keaton Wynn against the Miami Marlins, 6 innings, 1 earned run. I'm happy it worked out. He went 1-for-37 whiffs on that splitter with just a 57% strike rate. And why I'm saying that is because Keaton Wynn needs that. That's like what everything is. Yeah, it's not fun, something that I want to chase. I feel like this was just whatever. He gets the Mets next. That could work. Like, again, it's not really an interesting arsenal. It's four seamers at like 94, 95 and sinkers. And they're like typical. They're just like, all right, I exist. You're not, not anything exciting. We have Bryce Miller as well. Again, got the win against the Reds, but the Reds on the road are much worse than they are at home. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 1 hit, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. He had sinkers and sliders in the zone, and sweepers and sinkers were around. It really is a four-seamer game, though. And I still am searching for Bryce Miller to have something else to really compliment him and make him feel great. But I still feel like we're in this purgatory of Bryce Miller, like we were last year. Like, we're going to see a start like this, and we're going to probably see like two clunkers in a row, and then go back and forth. He gets the Rangers next. I think we're going to go for that, but I'm not seeing the growth in Bryce Miller that I want to see. But obviously, we're still holding on to him and everything. Trevor Rogers against the Giants. Now, this is very interesting. And I'm going to talk about this and, of course, everybody else from yesterday's games and today and tomorrow's starters after this break.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Trevor Rogers went 5.2 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 6 strikeouts. 14 whiffs, 34% CSW, and 93 pitches. And when you think about Trevor Rogers entering this game, the things that I've been talking about with his arsenal is really a 3-pitch mix, right? It's 4 seamers that we want to see at 93. It's change-ups that we want to see down and getting lots of strikes. And the slider that really is like the last piece of the puzzle. And the slider went 1 for 9 slider whiffs. So you're like, okay, cool. Must have been the changeup. 15% CSW on 33 thrown. So hold on a second. Like, what? You're telling me yes. 45% CSW on the four seamer, 50% on the sinker. 10 over 51 whiffs for Trevor Rogers' fastballs combined. Wow. So what did he do? Four seamers were upstairs beautifully. Changeups, sliders, sinkers all down beautifully. He did the Blake Snell blueprint, guys. Oh, I have not seen Trevor Rogers do that. Trevor Rogers with his four seamers more east to west from what I remember. But then again, I think about Trevor Rogers when he first had that 2021 breakout. And I remember this so distinctly. Like, Trevor Rogers was this interesting guy. Maybe he's going to do all right. Ray Butler had this article about like, hey, look, I really like Trevor Rogers. And all of a sudden, first 2 months, he was just electric. And everyone's go, oh my gosh, how did he get this? This was great. And Ray deserved that. And then on the second half, he was going through some things and he wasn't as good. And we just haven't really seen that from Trevor Rogers since. And this is 3 years later. 3 years since then, right? And we've been waiting for this. Maybe I did see that four seamer upstairs then. I got to remember this. But yeah, this is something that he's clearly changing. Like, this is an actual, hey, I am going to do this with my four seamer upstairs. That's really cool for Trevor Rogers. And I look at that Miami Marlins rotation. The guys that are locked in are Luzardo. So then it's like, okay, fine. Edward Cabrera, that's number 2. Braxton Garrett, when he returns, that's number 3. So then you have this whole battle for 4 and 5 that we thought about in the preseason, which was AJ Puck, which was Ryan Weathers, which is Trevor Rogers, which is Max Meyer. I don't see a world where Trevor Rogers doesn't have one of those spots, right? I see AJ Puck or Ryan Weathers easily getting displaced before Trevor Rogers. So I'm kind of in. I see Trevor Rogers as someone who could be finding his groove once again, who's not really considered. He's kind of been thought of as a lost cause at this point. The problem is that he gets Atlanta next. It is a two-step with the Nationals on Sunday. So that's at least a positive thing. I think people are going to avoid that Atlanta start as they should. But I think after that, I think we're going to be cruising with Trevor Rogers. That was a lot on Trevor Rogers, but I feel like that's a very interesting one where there are options for you to moves that you can make there because he is available on many wires in many leagues. There you go. Reed Detmers against the Rays was not as good as we've seen. He did get a lot of IVB, about 19 inches of it, which is amazing, but he came in softer. It wasn't 95, it was 93, 94. His command of it was not nearly as pristine, and everything really was just not a pristine spot for him. I think he was fortunate to face the Rays, who are a struggling offense right now, so he went 5.1 innings of 1 earned run, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. This is Reed Detmers. He gets the Orioles next. It's not the place I want him to be in, but I think we still have to do it. We just got to hope that this is like the misstep, right? This doesn't mean that he's now trending down forever or something like that. No. And one thing that Scott Chu mentions a lot when it comes to rolling charts and just overall performance for a year is it's less about the peaks and more about the floors of the valleys. And if you see a rolling chart, you'll generally see always going up where when it drops back down, it doesn't drop as far down as it previously did, right? So that means maybe this is the falling down and it's not nearly as bad. So interesting there. Kevin Gausman. So anyway, Reed Demers, we're holding on and obviously, and hopefully it's good against the Orioles. Kevin Gausman, 5 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks. So the velocity is back, baby. 94.8, which is pretty much the standard for Gausman, right? It's not really 96. It's normally like right there around 95, which is great because we saw these like terrible, like 91, 92 moments and stuff. And like, no, okay, it looks like you're fine. Cool. But the splitter had just a 45% strike rate. No. Ah, man. Like, that's... I don't know. That seems weird. But also, what is the thing that you generally can bank on for Gausman? It's a splitter, right? So I think that that's going to be fine. And I'm going to be starting him against the Royals. Dane Dunning did exactly what he was supposed to do against the Tigers. And that's cool. And we move on. Maybe he gets the Mariners. But yeah, that's okay. But this was the Tigers. So, okay. Jonathan Cannon, who's that? He made his MLB debut for the White Sox. It was a doubleheader against the Royals. And he was supposed to make his debut on Tuesday, made it on Wednesday. I watched this. 5 innings, 1 earned run, 3 hits, 1 walk, 3 Ks. He's a Toby. He has a really good sinker. He's going to get grounders with that. And he has a sweeper that sometimes has like amazing movement, a decent 89 mile per hour cutter. But Jonathan Cannon to me is not a guy you should be chasing, especially with the team context with the White Sox. It's just, yeah, no. Brandon Pfaadt against the Cubs did great. 48% CSW and 9 over 21 called strikes on his sinker. That's a huge deal. Because, I mean, introducing that means that maybe he can squeeze out more of his fastballs to make his sweeper good enough. Right? That's the main thing for Brandon Pfaadt is we need to see that his sweeper gets more help, and this was more help. So the changeup isn't enough. And is that sinker four-seamer really that good to make Brandon Pfaadt a dependable Holly type? I don't think so, but I understand he really is a Toby. Look at the Toby, which is generally a smaller range of outcomes, right? And then you see the cherry bomb, which is a very large one. Brandon Pfaadt is a stretched Toby that's not as far out as a cherry bomb, but it is more like, hey, you can go a strikeout per inning. Hey, you can also go like 4 runs on a given night. You know what I mean? He's not someone I really want to go for. Tarek Skubal against the Rangers, 6.1 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks, which is great. This was the Rangers. We're super happy. 14 whiffs, 33% CSW, except his 4-seamer. Oh, man, this is wild to me. Tarek Skubal, last year, what made us so much of a believer in Skubal? There was one element of this changeup being dope and making us feel dope, which is great and cool, and generally that is still there for Skubal. However, the 4-seamer, right? It jumped from this 94 mile per hour pitch to 96 last year, 95.8 to be exact. But yeah, 96. And it was earning 70% strikes and getting all these whiffs and just being like the best 4-seamer by every metric in that very small 2-month sample. So what do we see here? Well, this season he's been like 97, 98 on that 4-seamer. And then all of a sudden, 2 starts ago, he started dipping velocity by the end of it. And then last start, it was around 96. And we're like, is everything okay? Well, okay, so it is the same velocity again at 96. This is the 3rd start now. But it went 1 for 17 whiffs. So he threw more sinkers. 31% sinker usage. And it was great. 41% CSW. And, oh, okay, so Eno made a really good point on the craft yesterday that has me thinking, which was, hey, so there's this whole other game we don't talk about for pitchers, where they feel like they need to show something new every time so that hitters can't trust the scouting report against them. And what that means is if, you know, you guys know me, I have very much of like a blueprint of like generally every pitcher has a certain way that should work and be best for them, right? And it's like, okay, cool. You have this amazing four seamer. You should be using your four seamers here, your sinkers here, your X here, whatever. Every single situation kind of has that best probability thing you should do. The thing is, a lot of hitters study pitchers more now than ever, and there's this feeling from pitchers, this is what Eno was talking about yesterday, which really has me thinking, that they have to change their approach a bit every single time to make it less consistent, less predictable. And I can imagine that Skubal thinks, okay, you know what, I'm going to go in this game against the Rangers, I'm going to go more sinker because they think I'm just going to be going four seam, which means that I'm going to be able to get more called strikes, or I'm going to be able to get a weaker contact, all that kind of stuff on it. And that could be what's going on here. Or it could be a pitcher who's realizing that he went 1-for-17 whiffs on his four seamer and is now trying to find something else to work, which it did. But this is Tarek Skubal, right? If you're a top 10 ace, it doesn't matter what they think. You should just be able to dominate with it, right? Think about Garrett Cole. Think about Corbin Burns and Zach Wheeler and Jacob deGrom, right? These guys, you know what's coming and what their thing is, and they just do that. They don't change it. So it does make me a little weird out. I don't really think that Tarek Skubal suddenly has a 41% CSW sinker, but it's just another thing in the storyline. Like, you can just completely ignore the last 5 minutes about this conversation because, yeah, he did great against the Rangers. You're not going to do anything. You shouldn't be selling on this like weirdness, right? If you want to, you can. If you want to make a lateral deal and just kind of not, you know, ignore all of it, I actually would encourage that because, I don't know, when I see weird things from pitchers, I mean, sometimes obviously it's just like, oh, well, I'm being stupid and I'm just old man yells at cloud and I'm totally missing something. Maybe this is just so much better. But also, generally, there is something weird, right? Like, look at Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller was having success last year, and I just felt it was very weird. And then I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm just overlooking the fact that he's just commanding so well and everything works well. And then, yeah, then he doesn't do well. That happens a ton. So oftentimes when things are inconsistent and weird, it does mean that it's a showcase of things of him trying to hold it all together before the tether breaks. But anyway, I don't know. I'm not going to spell doom and gloom for Tarek Skubal. Only do if it's a lateral deal. Don't like sold pennies to the dollar or something like that. He's still in my top 10. Okay. Yeah, that was all a waste of time. All right. Michael Wacha against the White Sox. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. He did what he was supposed to do. He didn't get the win, though, because things are stupid. That's all. I prefer Wacha over Singer in his next start, by the way, because I think Singer is just back to four-seamer. Sinker slider. This was 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 base runners, 5 Ks for him. Only 2 out of 9 strikes on his four-seamer. And, this is the old Brady Singer, guys. This is not the guy that you have to hold for the year. I don't know why I'm talking like that. Andrew Abbott against the Mariners. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks. 3 out of 46 whiffs on his secondaries are just not really the thing that gets me jazzed. And with the Phillies next, I think Andrew Abbott is just kind of eh. But he is doing better, at least, at locating his four-seamer upstairs. That was cool in this one. That's how he got through it. But I just want to see more for me to like regularly trust the guy. Marcus Stroman against the Jays, 5.1 innings of 2 earned runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 2 Ks. I mean, yeah, this is it. Like, he throws sinkers and there's always something that one of the secondaries is what steps up. Like, today it was a slider and some curves, and sometimes it's the cutter. Sometimes it's the splitter. Like, one of the things just is that thing that day. And that's cool. And by the way, about that point about Andrew Abbott, when I talk about like guys on the fringe for me, guys that I don't feel like are doing the thing right now and are available on your wire, I will always lean on the one who is capable of actually sticking in my roster. So if I see a pitcher who isn't really doing, you know, it doesn't really have much electricity inside their arsenal, then they better be like a Toby, where I just trust that they can be a command guy or like have good matchups or something like that. If you aren't that, which is Andrew Abbott, then you have to display something in your arsenal that has a ton of upside and some path to me that is believable, that you can then all of a sudden become a staple inside of my rotation, right? That is the way that you establish a staff. I'm in a situation in one of my leagues where I have Justin Steele and Spencer Strider, okay? And I had AJ Puck in that league, I think, as well, or one of Puck or Hall, and I've been trying to search for more things now, right? Because I'm in a tough scenario there. I lost my two guys that were supposed to be my rocks, and then one of the gambles that I took, right? So the strategy there is not to try and keep your head above water with Abbott, who like could be good in a moment or something like that. It's to go after the higher ceiling guys that could be more long term for you. So in that case, let's say Jared Jones was available, that would have been a perfect one. I took Luis Heel on that one, which isn't working out, unfortunately, yet. I'm going one more start with Heel. Hopefully his control is better, but that's it there. But I picked up Yusei Kikuchi after his first start, thinking that maybe he'll revert back to the curveball, which he did. And that now is looking like more of a stable thing. Tanner Houck, right? That has that extra element of like, hey, 25% plus strikeout rate, right? I'm still trying to figure that one out. Unfortunately, still isn't out for the entire year. But that's the kind of strategy you have to take when it comes to the end of your rosters. And Andrew Abbott isn't quite doing that. Landon Knack against the Nationals, 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. He got the 75 pitches, which is surprising to me, but I'm not really in on this. Like, it's mostly 2-pitch. He has some changeups and curves in there. That was 30% usage, but 70% of this was 4-seamer and slider. And I don't know. It just wasn't that exciting. I wanted more from Landon Knack personally. There, I know that there is more in like the slider here, but I just feel that, And I made a terrible Knack joke for the video game inside of the SP roundup if you didn't get that one. Okay. Ben Lively against the Red Sox. Yeah, we don't really expect much from Lively, except that he won 7 Ks in 5 innings. How did he do that? 34% CSW on 4-seamers and sweepers, which is what is shocking to me. He just kind of pounded the zone, and they're just like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. I'm like, no, that's not going to last. JP France survived against Atlanta. That's cool. 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, 4 Ks. Man, there were so many guys to go over today. He threw fewer 4-seamers inside the zone. That's cool. I don't really think that there's like amazing stuff going on. Really, that cutter can be very good. I just, it's all pedestrian still for JP France. And if you really are chasing a win chance, I mean, I know the Houston Astros haven't been doing that. They should, though. JP France is fine, I guess. I don't want to go for it against the Cubs. Billy Falter against the Mets had a decent line, and I still think that he's going to be at Ray. I've been saying for ages, and I know it's never going to happen because I keep saying it now, but I'll stop it. But Billy Falter, yeah, he throws decent high fastball sometimes. Okay. Jordan Wicks did not do the thing against the Diamondbacks. I'm really annoyed. 4.1 innings of 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. Just 1 over 27 whiffs on his 4-seamer, and he didn't really get it upstairs as I wanted him to do it, and he gets the Astros next, so we're fine moving on. Hayden Wesneski did show up for 4 innings after, and it was fine. Like, sliders were off the plate enough, and he did well with those, and he had fastballs, and that was it. And you don't really need to chase Hayden Wesneski. That is not going to be something that lasts inside of a rotation spot. Paul Blackburn against the Cardinals, 5.2 innings of 300 runs, 6 hits, 5 walks, 7 Ks. Wait, I thought he wasn't going to allow another run all year. He got the win at least for Pauly Punchouts. You should not be starting against the Yankees. And the Vargas rule is now done, guys. That is 11 base runners in just under 6 innings. Do not go after this. I don't care if it's 7 Ks, 9 whiffs, stop against the Cardinals. Zach Littell against the Angels, womp womp. I mean, not really. Everyone did well for the most part, save like 2 guys. 5.2 innings of 300 runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. It's still high sliders, and those are working. But he has low splitters, and he had 29% called strikes on the sinker. He gets the Tigers next, so that's cool. But yeah, I don't really think this is a long-term play. Max Fried was looking good against the Astros, then he had a tough 5th inning. And his changeup isn't there. That's actually, I think, one of the weirder parts right now, is that the changeup is not the exceptional pitch it was in 2022 and 2023. But this was against the Astros. He did a really good job of locating his sinkers and his 4-seamers. Yeah, he should be really good against the Marlins. Don't worry about him. Steven Matz, PL Bot, got this one wrong. I mean, understandable. He went into Oakland. It's 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 3 walks, and 4 Ks. It's Steven Matz. Don't do this. He's not very good. And last but not least, Ryan Feltner, who actually won the Gallows poll at 23 whiffs, believe it or not. Against the Phillies in Philly, 5.1 innings of 6 earned runs, 9 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. So it was his 4-seamer and slider has been like the pitches, right? Those are the things that like, oh man, if he was on a different squad, we'd feel cool about it, but I wish he had a third pitch. So the slider went 7 for 32 whiffs. 4-seamer didn't really do much. It was 10 over 19 whiffs on his changeup. And I feel like the Phillies were just selling out for the fastball, and that's probably what happened here. But whoa, 25% swing strike rate for Feltner. I don't think we're at a place where we just start Feltner outside, of course. I feel like this was a game where he just surprised with changeup and that's it, but that was kind of cool, and huge props to Feltner for that. All right, looking forward to today and tomorrow's games. I'm going to say today's because there's nothing. It's Webb and Pepio, which is obviously auto starts, and then Ryan Nelson's our stream pick against the Giants because the Giants are terrible. Questionable start here. You have Jack Leiter against the Tigers. Hey, I'll be live in like 45 minutes, so go hang out with me there. Griffin Canning It's going to be really fun. He's a questionable start here in Griffin Canning against the Rays. I don't like Griffin Canning that much. I don't really love this one, but it's the Rays, and hopefully he does not allow too many hits on his secondaries, and his fastball is only thrown like 30% of the time, and hopefully closer to 94. Do not start here. I don't want to go with Kenta Maeda because it's just too much of a coin flip, and the Rangers are good. Jameson Taillon's returning from the IL. That is a still ill against the Miami Marlins. AJ Puck's on the other side against the Cubs. No, thank you. Cooper Criswell has an opener, and that means you might want to actually put him at the top of do not start, as he is a decent win chance. Now, for the full outing, though, I don't know if he's really going to go four or more innings, but you do have a vulture win possibility here against the Guardians because Carlos Carrasco is against is in Fenway, and that's no fun. All right, that is for today, and then tomorrow, Freddy Peralta, Joe Ryan, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Shota Imanaga are all auto starts. Also, Garrett Crochet against the Phillies, that's fine. It's Garrett Crochet going to do that. Probable start here is an interesting one because you have some debuts of the year. You have Justin Verlander returning his 77 pitches in his last rehab start, which makes me confident that he can go 80-85 against the Nationals. That feels really good. You have Nick Lodolo against the Angels. That's awesome. That feels pretty fun for me. You have Brian Bello against the Pirates. You have Chris Sale against the Rangers. Those are guys where, I mean, with Chris Sale, it's against the Rangers, yes, but same with Jesus Luzardo against the Cubs. Like, both are good offenses. At the same time, those guys are too good. They're not really going to bench them, but probable start, I understand. They have Jordan Montgomery versus Blake Snell, which is so funny to me because those are the two late free agents and they're both like, oh, you too, you're delayed? Oh, awesome. Great. Cool. We're going to, let's do this together, man. Yeah. And Jordan Montgomery has the better matchup against the Giants, but how many pitches is he going to go in this first one? Is he going to be able to go five innings? Same with Blake Snell as he gets the Diamondbacks. I don't know. I would still go with both of them if I have them because Blake Snell at least has two starts behind him. While Jordan Montgomery does get the Giants, I still feel like Jordan Montgomery is a Giant and it feels backwards to me. Blake Snell should be on the Diamondbacks and Montgomery should be on the Giants, but whatever. But yeah, good luck to both of them. Clark Schmidt is our stream pick of the day against the Rays. I don't think the Rays are very good. Schmidt's good win chance, etc. Mackenzie Gore looked great last time he gets the Astros. It's unfortunate the Astros, but Astros also have been kind of weak, so I'm going to go for that. Spencer Turnbull against the White Sox, I do like that one because it's a great matchup. Spencer Turnbull isn't so exciting. And Jack Flaherty against the Twins, I know it could be a questionable start, but honestly, Jack Flaherty's breaking balls are really good right now. The Twins are kind of weird offensively. I think it's fine. He got pummeled by fastballs in the zone before. I think it was a bad luck day there. Two starts ago. Questionable start here is only one of them. It's Tristan McKenzie against the Athletics. I don't know. I'm going to say no because he just looks really bad. It reminds me of like Chris Sale when he was throwing half-heartedly. But it is Oakland, so maybe that does work. Do not start here. Yariel Rodriguez, he just doesn't impress me enough like Shania Twain. And you have probably a limited pitch count, and it's also the Padres. I just don't want to do it. Dean Kramer against the Royals. Not really a fan of that one. Tyler Alexander against the Yankees. Like, those two guys, they both have had moments. And if Dean Kramer's throwing his splitter, maybe that does work against the Royals for a win. Don't really love it, though. Of course not. Tyler Anderson in Cincinnati just did poorly in Fenway. And yeah, this is in Cincinnati. Not fun. Matt Waldrum, don't trust a knuckleballer, but it could happen. You don't have to trust them, but okay. Maybe it does happen against the Jays. Alec Marsh has done well against the Orioles, but it's Alec Marsh and that's not going to happen twice, right? Joe Boyle, if he throws enough strikes against the Guardians, maybe. Okay, Kyle Gibson, you never know. So whatever against the Brewers. And then you got really bad matchups here of like Sean Manaea against the Dodgers, Emerson Hancock in Coors, and Andrew Heaney against Atlanta. Then it's Dakota Hudson in Coors against the Mariners, and Quinn Priester, who had good spotted sliders in the spring against the Red Sox. I don't want to do that. I just think that Quinn Priester was just so bad last year, they don't need to do this. All right, thank you so much for listening. Man, this is a long one. Great timing, Nick, because you have to be live in 40 minutes. So I'll talk to you guys there. Go watch the Jack Leiter start with me and the PL crew at playback.tv/pitchless from like 1 to 3, something like that. Come on by. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.